Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Rajinder and I have with me Avnish, founder and VC at Matrix Partners. Avnish, today's episode is titled The Hack Job, Hacking Your Way to Growth and Profits. Thank you for doing this. We also have folks joining on Clubhouse today. Apologies to those with just figuring out the audio on this. So if there's any issues, then you know, do let us know. We'll get it fixed quickly. The first question that we have is, what matters more in your mind, growth or profitability?
Yeah, so Rajinder, we are trying to be really high tech here, and I can see some people are on Clubhouse. We are also shooting for those people over there. We are also shooting live over here for our normal Matrix Moments, and Rajinder is looking very nervous and I am feeling very nervous of trying to make this work together. But excited to do this, and hopefully we can pull it off in trying to do this multimedia thing. So in terms of the this is the eternal question, right? Is growth more important or is profitability more important? Let me ask you this. What's your impression of how, and what is the general narrative around how the Indian budget has been received?
Actually, it's very positive. The markets are like, what, 20% up in the last 3 months? Some of it was pre-budget, some of it was post-budget.
Yeah. And what's the biggest change from how we used to do our budgets before versus now?
Well, first, we used to have this whole, I think there was an economic survey which used to get conducted, and then they used to release those results, and then there was a budget that was presented. Now we've just gone straight through into the budget.
What was the emphasis of the budget? There's a lot of talk about growth, right, yeah, in this budget. We used to always, from the days of when the IMF bailed us out, the fiscal deficit was set as a target. In the realm of the world we live in, that's the burn rate of the country. That's the difference between the revenues and the expenses. So we were always burn-led, burn first. So fiscal deficit was the target. And then we used to work our way backwards into what can I, this is my revenue, this is my fiscal deficit target, so how much can I spend? We just let go of that. Our fiscal deficit last year is going to be 9%, meaning 21 March, and next year maybe 7%. And therein lies the point that growth matters. So my view is clearly everywhere in the world growth matters. But let me ask you, let's go through a personal finance example. All of us, we get opportunities, not through venture capital, but let's say we could invest in one of four companies. One which is revenue of 100, zero growth, 10% profit, and gives the profit every year back to us. Another one, let's for the sake of argument say 100, growing 30%, but losing 20% a year, and then promising to make it up in year 7-8. Third example, 100, not growing very well, losing 30. Just between these three, what would you pick?
I mean, obviously the company that's growing the fastest is the one that you are going to get most attracted by, right? The promise of future dividends is far more exciting than the promise of no growth.
Well, so therein, that's the issue, right? So ultimately, we are, and also you have to look at the opportunity cost, right? We can invest in various instruments and probably get that 10%. If I'm investing in something which is a company which is likely riskier, I'm probably looking for a better return. To get that better return, if you have no growth, I'm not going to get that better return. So I think, but when you zoom out, just what you said says that it depends on the objective. Is the objective wealth preservation or value creation, right? So if it is preservation, profits are definitely better. But if it is value creation, which is the world we live in, you know, then clearly growth we want to go for. In our world, I will tell you that high burn, high growth companies scare all of us, scare me also. But somehow or the other, often they get funded. And how many times have we been in situations where companies are profitable, not growing very well, and it's very hard to get investor interest?
Yeah, happens more than people would care to admit, I think, internally. And I've heard other VCs also use this term, that companies which are not growing are considered to be zombie companies in some ways.
Yep. So high growth, high burn will likely get you funded. Well, can get you funded, and we'll come to unit economics still matters. So it's not as black and white that profits don't matter. Profits do matter. It is the future profits that matter. And the present unit economics, which is a proxy to those future profits that we have discussed before in some of these other episodes. So absolutely growth with unit economics. If you have no growth, if you have high growth and no unit economics, you're in a very risky situation. But you know, today I tweeted liquidity trumps risk, so you could probably get a SPAC and you can go public like that. I think one of a simple indicator, Rajinder, of saying unit economics is not working, which people often miss, is you have high growth but increasing burn. So it's as simple as that. We can talk about gross margin, contribution margin, this margin, that margin. But if your revenues are growing and your burn is growing, on a like-to-like basis, let's say you've entered new cities, new markets, that's fine. In your existing market, are your losses decreasing with the passage of time? And I think that is the core point.
No, so that matters. I get that. There was this post earlier that the quality of growth matters and that all revenue is not created equal. I know that's a maxim that you followed with many conversations internally. But let me ask the question, like, how do you know whether profits will come? I mean, there's simple proxies like, you know, today's unit economics, but how does one actually work this out if you're a founder building a company?
I mean, this is like we have discussed before, I think the marginal value add episode probably will be the best, but you have to go deeper into each of the margins of the company and then essentially disaggregate and see on a like-to-like. I'll tell you where a lot of times people make a mistake, and I've seen it with founders everywhere. They pick the margin that's doing better that month. Pick one number. You know, in the offline world, there used to be like-to-like sale. Is in the same store the sale growing, right? So pick a number. So let's say it's contribution margin one, contribution margin two, but is that improving month over month or with growth or not? And then there's a lot of future calling. You know, will there be moats? What will be the competition? How will customer behave? So calling this future is not easy, but calling the present is easy, no? So just focus on the present of the unit economics, and then the investors will do the projection for the future. I'll tell you one big change that's happening in India that I think soon will get talked about. And when I was talking to some of the later stage investors, it's becoming apparent. So a new breed of, or there are probably four types of investors, okay? So the high growth, ready to fund losses kind of investors have been there for a while. We've heard their name, Tigers, Kotus. Now again, they are underwriting the future cash flows and future profit pools. There is now a good growth, good profit plus scale. So think Policy Bazaar. They are planning to go public. I think Zomato is supposed to be going public. I'm told that they are also positive on EBITDA. These was the traditional PE set that was never looking at tech. They are ready to enter tech because of profits. So let's not be dismissive of, ultimately, by having profits with good growth. Good growth I define as 2x nominal GDP. So 20 to 30%. Don't have to be 50, 60, 70%. But good growth, good profit, but scale. Thousands of crores. That's a big change in India. We didn't used to have companies with scale. Kirana store is also profitable, but you know, ultimately it doesn't have the scale. So I think that's a big change. And then of course, if you get high growth and profits, the market goes crazy. So you've seen that with companies like Dream 11, Byju's, a bunch of these companies, which will see rapid value accretion because they have both.
Yeah. No, and I think high growth, no unit economics.
SPACs.
Well, okay. So clearly it sounds like growth is critical. And I'm actually surprised to hear that this, you know, 2-3x nominal GDP is not a bad growth rate. So in your mind, how fast should companies grow?
Yeah, you know, before we go to that, one point I will make is my personal mantra is growth is life. You have to go for growth, but not be at the mercy of, or not having control of your own destiny is not acceptable. So what does that mean? One control of your destiny is profits. The other control of your destiny is, okay, fine, be resourceful if you're able to raise enough capital from various places. But if I were running a company, I would be growing as fast as I can with what I would think of as infinite runway. You know, either my economics is such that I can slow down growth and make money, or I can raise so much capital that I have a good 3-4 years of runway. And some of the experienced founders we have seen doing that. Coming back to the question of what is the right growth rate. So first, there is a, you know, just in finance, there is, in for mature companies, there is this concept of sustainable growth rate. And we won't bore everybody with the terms, but there's a DuPont ratio. Net, net, if you don't want to raise external equity and external debt, or external debt, you can grow at the rate of your return of equity. And very simplistically, it's logical. Whatever money you have, us pe jo return bana, us rate pe aap grow kar sakte. Simple. You want to grow faster, raise external resources, right? Now, that's not very applicable for our kind of industry, which is why we then start looking for proxies. And I think what will be the most interesting here will be to actually go through some examples, because we go through these live. But before we go there, you know, the underlying view therefore is that growing faster will create more value. You've seen models, we have spoken about models like Amazon, where they were looking to capture future profit pools, not current profit pools. Now the question is, what is the fastest? And we also put a constraint of saying, don't break unit economics, right? So let's take a D2C business example. So in a D2C business example, where you know there are cohorts, you have some view of LTV to CAC. Classic VC thing that we get made fun of, right? Go, grow faster. But how fast, right? And what you can do is you can say, we have discussed earlier, what is a good LTV to CAC? You know, you want to be at a certain level of LTV to CAC, and we'll talk more in this episode also. Pick a number. Now, once you pick that number, you know your cohorts, you know your repeat rates, and by the way, measure them correctly. Cohorts have to be measured at in LTV to CAC at CM level, not at a CAC, not at a GM level. But once you know what your LTV to CAC target is, you know your cohorts, you can derive back into what can be your CAC and what can be your growth rate assuming a certain CAC. How do you determine a certain CAC? When you say LTV to CAC of 3x, for example, that means likely that your CAC should be getting paid back in 9 to 12 months, most likely, something like that. But instructively, that is the thought. And therefore, you can decide what your growth rate is.
So if I'm spending, let's call it, you know, $5 to acquire a customer, then I must make back $5 in contribution margin within the year. That's what I'm understanding. So 1x in a year.
But we have situations where companies are making back in month zero or month one. And therein lies the thing, that you could actually grow faster, but at some stage you'll break it completely because you don't know, you know, like your CAC starts going up, and that has happened. So then where do you stop? And what I'm trying to say is, the way you stop is to say, okay, the maximum risk I'm willing to take is, it can take 6 months or 9 months for my customer to be paid back. If that is the case, it automatically spits out a growth rate on that CAC.
So Avnish, we were at LTV and CAC, and you were giving examples from...
So we discussed D2C. Then you go to network effects marketplaces like, let's say, an Uber Ola. So here you said, okay, I know, I have set my LTV to CAC, what do I need to make? And these businesses are more linear and more predictable in some ways. So I know that, and therefore I picked a CAC based on CAC paid back, and I spit out a growth rate, right? In network effects businesses, it's very different. I mean, we have seen those businesses can grow 10x in a year, right? So in those businesses, you basically, because of network effects, your cohorts are much more predictable. So you know how your current customers will come in. So based on that, it's much easier to predict the growth rates of those businesses. If those growth rates are much more predictable, you are generally willing to go for a lot more CAC, and therefore try to grow the business faster. ultimately, you can grow a business at, if you're willing to throw money away, you can grow a business at whatever speed you want. It just won't be sustainable. And these are the kind of checks and balances one can have to figure out what is the right pace to grow it. I think the net of it, Rajendra, the way I think about it is, in consumer fintech kind of businesses, these are compounding businesses where the market is very wide, very deep. Everybody can create $1 billion plus business by catering to a certain customer segment better than what anybody else could. And it's not winner takes all. So these are good 2.5 to 3x annualized growth businesses for a long period of time. So you'd rather get to 10x in 2 years than 10x in 1 year. Network effect businesses tend to be winner takes all.
Yeah.
And that's where, why the network example, we said, then just you can go for broke. So.
No, I think this is very helpful. I think you mentioned LTV should be measured with CM, not GM. I'm going to just flip to CAC. Some people talk about, you know, blended CAC. Some people talk about paid CAC. Some people talk about, you know, CAC including digital. Some people talk about CAC including brand and digital. What's the right way to look at your CAC?
Yeah, blended CAC is dangerous. So just to define blended CAC is you take your total marketing spend and divide it by your total number of customers, new customers. Now, new customers is a mix of paid and unpaid. So what blended CAC is does, which can be, let's say you have a business with 70% organic traffic versus a business with 30% organic traffic. It's not very easy to change this mix because that requires a whole bunch of brand building. It happens with a period of time. So if you have a lot of, I'm trying to do the math right, if you have a lot of organic traffic and you use blended CAC, you may understate your CAC. You will understate your CAC. Right? And when that 30 goes to 40 and 50, you're not understating. So paid CAC is the right look at it, which is how much am I spending to actually get that customer? Just because I'm getting other customers for free, I should not make this fully loaded on that. So I think that's something that people make a mistake on. Second, I myself am a proponent of not including brand spends. But the more I read about it, the more I worried that I was wrong. And it's because brand building ultimately pays off in potentially lower CAC later. But that is because of this spend. So if this spend is not being allocated to that lower CAC, again, it's sending you wrong signals. Mm. The question is, what are you trying to do this for? If you're trying to do this for managing a business, you want the most accurate signals and you want to reduce the noise the most, right? So I think there's the that's one clear thing to keep in mind. Now, in terms of LTV to CAC, we discussed what are the right kind of numbers to follow, right? And we discussed that there is a customer level return. So for example, we just discussed you want 40% return, right? So if you give that to a customer, you want that return from them also. Then what is your LTV to CAC in 2 years? 1.4 times 1.4. In 3 years, times 1.4. So I think the bar in India is too low. We talk about LTV to CAC of 2 or 3 to be very good. I think it's terrible. It should be 5 to 6, if a business has to generate a certain IRR, the customer of that business has to generate that IRR. Therefore, the LTV to CAC has to be like that. So if you do 40-45% and you compound it, you end up with 5 or 6x. But I think the better way to potential way to do it, because we are in investing in businesses that are just taking off and need more gestation, is 1 in 1, 2 in 2, 3 in 3, 4 in 4, 5 in 5. Try to get to that kind of multiples. And because it's hard to project 5 years out, if you're tracking to 2 in 2, you're probably in good shape.
Yeah. So just to summarize, I think rule one, look at your cohorts. Cohorts is pretty much what determines how much return you're going to generate from whatever investment you're making upfront. evaluate your LTV using contribution margin, not gross margin. And then when it comes to CAC, basically focus more on paid CAC, which includes all forms of CAC. And I guess the reason to do it this way is because marketing is really your core lever of growth that we've focused on thus far. And what you're trying to figure out is growth and profitability.
Yes, yes, yes. Except marketing shouldn't be your core growth, which we'll talk about now. But I think if ultimately, Rajendra, I had to run a business and somebody said, balance growth and profitability and just look at two numbers, which are in the present. Everything else we are saying is in the future. I would look at contribution margin and I would look at cohorts. Contribution margin will tell me about the health of the business. Cohorts will tell me about the growth of the business.
Yeah. So I guess the focus is as much on growth. So I spoke incorrectly that marketing was the key, one of the key drivers. It is. But in, other than that, we've started hearing this term growth hacking. And frankly, it's been now applied to multiple industries. I guess the question is, if you have to hack growth, do you have PMF?
You know, so this is what I've probably spent the most time on thinking about over the last month or so, thinking about this topic. And it was a realization to me at multiple levels, including that we'll come to that, that growth is harder than profitability. Although we probably always think about it the opposite, right? But I will tell you that there are, we have always, you and I have discussed early PMF, PMF and scalable, sorry, early PMF, scalable PMF and scalable profitable PMF. The other way to think about it, which a lot of the literature talks through, is traction, growth and profits, right? So with that, I think the growth phase is very different from the traction phase. Traction is the PMF. And I think growth is a very different set of drivers to drive growth. But coming to growth hacking, so the term, just for everybody's benefit, was coined by Shaul. LSC's also coined this habit indicator that we like, we have used earlier. And his definition was fairly simple. Andrew Chen came up with a definition, growth hackers are a hybrid of marketer and coder. After reading everything, my own definition is hyper-analytical person driving product, distribution, technology, and marketing interventions using customer insights to deliver growth. So who does this sound like?
Actually, I don't know.
The founder.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the reality, right? I mean, ultimately, if growth is the, if growth will create value and founders are going to create value, I mean, that's what they are trying to drive. But I think it is a big realization that you can actually do this by creating, and we should, again, in the video cast at least, include a lot of the links, by creating these pods of cross-functional people who are basically trying to drive growth.
So this doesn't sound like hacking. This sounds like a very deliberate, thoughtful, methodical kind of process.
Yeah, yeah, and it is, and it is. And I think the hacking thing is mainly because it is highly iterative and highly analytical, and I think that's probably where it came from and got coined. But it is very scientific, and I think the biggest thing is this consumer insights team. But if you take that team back and you say, how would I structure after having that team, I actually believe, and this applies in India also, that there is a lot of low-hanging fruit that one can tap into and get growth in their business. Whether it's on, ultimately, where does growth come from? New customers or existing customers? And then you say, okay, for new customers, what are the loops? What are the vectors? For existing customers, what are the growth loops? What are the vectors? And essentially try to get a lot of these things done analytically. Let's go to examples because they're generally the most useful. So if you are trying to drive cohorts, we spoke about cohorts and contribution margin as being the two key. You are basically trying to drive more retention. If you're trying to drive more retention, what will you do to get a customer back? The lazy way.
Discounts, notifications.
Exactly, right? It's all discounts and notifications. What is the hardworking way? What does TikTok do really well? And we keep talking about it.
TikTok is more data and AI to basically drive personalization.
Highly personalized. Yeah. What were the other, you were giving other ideas?
No, I think one was increasing selection, if you're thinking as an e-commerce platform.
Also. I guess. But for selection, again, customers' insights backwards, saying what is my share of wallet with this customer? And what else can I tap into? And what is my right to win there?
Yeah.
Right? So it's very, very deep. It's not surface level, right? Gamification. Let's talk about vertical cohorts. Let's actually move on from that. But I think this cross-selling, gamification, community, these are the hard-working drivers of growth. And generally what happens is one, you know, kind of stops at the lazy, so-called quote-unquote lazy drivers of growth. And they won't work, by the way, long term. Let's say you have to drive margins. We spoke about CM. What is a lazy way of driving margins? Increase price?
Pricing, yeah, simple.
What do you think that happens in India?
Well, India is a price-sensitive market, so you reduce TAM.
So your market size shrinks, right? Versus, what are the hard-working way of driving margin? I mean, you know all this, but we have invested in companies doing some of this, logistics, RTO, you know, input costs, getting stuff like that. So nothing to do with shrinkage of the market, but actually working very hard to get all of this. So I think the net is to drive growth, you have to get into the head of the customer. And we have used this Jeff Bezos' customer obsession a lot. On his way out, he coined a new term. It's called customer ecstasy. Like be so inside the mind of the customer that you can actually cause them ecstasy. And this, that I think it starts with that and then builds a lot of analytical rigor with all these tools to drive growth. But net, I don't know if it feels like it, but it's a harder process. Because profits seem to have, at least to me, more deterministic tools. Let me go negotiate bulk discounts on my inputs and I'll get better gross margin. It's generally related to cost optimization. Growth seems much more non-deterministic and harder.
Yeah, but there's much stronger link to innovation, which is harder to do. So you mentioned this whole piece around customer insights. Can you talk a little bit more? Like, do startups actually have such teams? Like, I know a few have spoken about it, but are there examples you can think of?
No, so startups, like we have spoken about this in the Country Delight discussion also, there are customer-obsessed founders, there's no doubt. I think increasingly so. Customer Insights is a data sciences team. And actually, it's a great point you brought it up. It should be set up as a core function. And this is not just analytical. These are people who are picking up the phone and talking to customers. They'll be able to tell you the tonality. They will be able to tell you that person's persona. Personas are about behaviors. I think a lot of customer insights that everybody uses are about demographics. This person is from such and such SEC. This is their income level. What is their persona? And we have discussed in the past about Maslow's hierarchy. That's a human psychology game. What is the persona and psychology of this person? And I think the customer insights team would tell you that. And then therefore give you the inputs to drive the other stuff for growth.
Yeah, it amazes me that we're in year 10 of e-commerce in India, and like in year 10, we're growing probably just as fast as we were in year 5 or year 6. So clearly the industry has figured out some growth vector and some customer insight that seems to be working.
So well, the latest one is on tier 2, tier 3, tier 4, right? I think if you look at a lot of the pivots that have happened, not pivots or evolutions of the model, it is about saying the customer persona of tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 is X, which is different than what is in tier 1. So, but I still don't think it's scientific enough yet. Of course, companies have these teams, but I don't think it's scientific enough yet. And I think that is the next phase that people will need to use, because remember the market is deepening, but competition is also coming.
Yeah.
So
now I'm going to switch gears and, you know, leave some time for questions from the group on Clubhouse. In one of the reference reads that we had, we spoke about user acquisition as a lever doesn't scale. How does it then scale the business?
Yeah. And that's more of an extreme statement to drive home the point that marketing is not the growth engine. Okay. The analogy that was coming to my head was, so marketing is the fuel that fuels the growth engine. So, you know, we all saw this United Airlines flight over the last few days going around with a burning engine. If you poured more fuel on that, it wouldn't fix the engine, it would do the opposite because the engine is broken, right? So I think a lot of these hardworking tools have to be in place. You have personalization, you have great growth vectors with your geographies, with your SKUs, you understand your customer, that is the underlying thing. You have gamification, you have community, you have all of this stuff. Be my guest and acquire as many users as possible. But if you don't have repeat in your business, let's go through a simple math. You know, let's say a business is starting at 100 customers, call it revenue of 100. In one case, 70% repeat next month, year. In another case, 30% repeat the next year. And you want both these businesses to be, let's say, 300 at the end of the third year. I mean, you can do the math. In one case, you have to add a lot more new customers. That's the leaky bucket problem, right? Pouring marketing fuel on the fire of a leaky bucket makes it worse. And you expand problems at scale. First, you have to figure out if I were to run a business, I would figure out how do I make my business grow without any marketing. Zero. So if I have to achieve that, I'll have to figure out all these other vectors. Once I figure out all these vectors, and with the unit economics and contribution margin, then I would pour the fuel on the fire. So now the counter argument, just because, like I said, that was an extreme statement, is that marketing online is far more powerful than marketing offline. You have customer, you know, you have been a marketeer and you worked in brands. It used to be that you had to set up focus groups. You had to go out and survey. It would take 4 months to build a report or 3 months report. Probably another 6 to 9 months to act on it. Now you can do it like this, right? So it's all online, but where's the customer insight for it? And is it on the hardworking tools? And I think that's what matters the most.
You know, there's one example you had spoken of earlier, just before we started this, you spoke of GoPro. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, so you know, I didn't know this. Again, it came up in this. Imagine a product like that. How did they get virality going? Now, obviously, it's a daring adventurers, camera and all of that. They encouraged people to share it on YouTube. People seeing it on YouTube saw that it was shot with GoPro. It started the viral loop of people wanting to buy those cameras because it was on the adventurers channels, and so it was all, and it was on the adventure blogs and everywhere, right? And that's the point. And the ultimate measure is how many customers are you getting for free? Organic percentage, right? And I thought that was actually a very, very smart one. So I think NetNet, and by the way, the platform we are on, Clubhouse, how much have they spent on marketing?
Probably nothing.
Well, Elon Musk, maybe if you count, maybe $150-200 billion, but I don't think they have, right? I don't know for sure. But it is on this viral loop. Yesterday, there was an event Tarun and Kunal did, supposedly 400 entries today. We are doing it in the day, so I don't know how many we have. But so it's a pure virality has been built in. All these social networks where you invite people, they have gamification, they have virality, they have community, everything. It is the hardworking growth loop. Google and Facebook never advertised in their first probably decade of existence.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm taking away from this that growth and profitability matters.
But before we go there, Rajinder, you know, we didn't cover one thing which we will put up in our video cast. which is kind of the hack job growth and profit loops. And I'm going to call out, you know, two, three things from that. It's a slide I have in front of me. So one has to have customer personas. And customer personas of demographics and all we know, I think the biggest watch out is behaviors. Really understanding the psychology of the customer. You and I did the gamification video cast where we talked about 8 different types of motivators and stuff like that. Really understand that. So personas, not this person lives here and is this age and this income. Who are they? What motivates them? What are their aspirations? Those are the questions to answer. That is true customer insights. Then think about products, which is the products that I have to map. The growth vectors, just to summarize, you could have more products, you could be in more markets, you could be in more segments of the markets, you could be more driven by community, personalization, more product as in the tech product slash app, content. We didn't speak about content. Distribution channels. We still haven't spent a penny on marketing. First get these 8, 9 right. And then, so if you think of a flywheel, personas, products, profits. And personas connect to products with user journeys, acquisition, activation, retention, referral. Referral is the most underused. You already have a customer, they can get you a customer for free, and most of the time it will be, I'll give you 100 rupees for it. They won't refer anybody. They won't refer anybody. You do leaderboard, you do some gamification, you come up, I just learned yesterday, somebody's come with a, it's not in India, savings bank account, lower interest rate, but $10 million monthly lotto. So one of the savings account will get 10 million. Do you care about 3% interest rate, 1% interest rate, or about 10 million? I'm betting you it will be the next Robin Hood, where people will migrate to it. Because they've figured out aspiration. That 1-2% is not going to make a difference, right? Then of course profits, we have discussed a bunch of profits, and moats are the other two connectors which we have discussed before.
Yeah, no, awesome. We've spoken of growth hacking, and I'm just going to ask one last question before we open it out. Any view on profit hacking?
Yeah, and it's, you know, very simply, we discussed it in the marginal value add, so I think it's more just thinking and watching more businesses and summarizing it for people. I think if you can't make 20% gross margin in a business, you're deluding yourself that you're adding any value. And often I have this debate, and one of the well-respected founders in the ecosystem made this point to me, saying, agar utna nahi kar sakte, to India mein kabhi paise nahi banne wale. And I really think people don't get it. And then when you go back to our older days of trading businesses and all of that, they were at 10%. If a trading business in the older day can make 10%, now you're doing a tech-enabled business, can't you make 20%, right? So second, contribution margin one, if it is negative, I don't think you have product market fit. Or you don't know whether you have product market fit until the contribution margin is positive. Contribution margin two is negative. That means you may not have LTV to CAC. And you may not have growth engine, and therefore you have to figure out the LTV to CAC. And ultimately, remember what we discussed, that ultimately money is about return on equity. Think about business the same way you think about your personal investing. If you're giving X, how much do you want and when, right? And the minute you keep thinking out like that, I think we'll be in good shape.
Awesome. Thanks, Avneesh.
Thanks for tuning in. If you found this interesting, you can check out other episodes that were referenced by Avneesh and Rajinder, specifically the episodes previously published on moats, marginal value add, profit pools, and gamification. You can find these episodes on www.matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.